you get an extension and you get an extension and you and I get an extension, please. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about the Christian Campbell extension with the Boston Red Sox, Ketel Marte extending with the Arizona Diamondbacks. We chat about the Dodgers and Padres having zero losses, the Braves having zero wins, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. It is a delightful, beautiful, sensational episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world. Who knows that the real Dylan G is playing for the Mets? I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And pitching it Shea Stadium is both mysterious and important.
As Jake treks his way through Severance, he had a wonderful realization that somehow did not hit me at any point while I was watching the show. Yes, Dylan G. Who, pop quiz, when did Dylan G last throw a major league pitch?
2019.
The answer is 2017 with... Okay, did you know the three other teams Dylan G pitched for besides the Mets? Because I did not know there were three of them.
I have it in front of me. I knew one of them was the Royals. That was in my head. But the other two are the Rangers and the Twins. We are not going to be talking about a man who compiled 5.9 WAR over the course of his career on this podcast. This is going to be a fun one. We are recording this Thursday evening at 8:17 p.m. Which means I'm sipping on a beer because, ooh, hell yeah, night podcasting. And we're going to chat Christian Campbell. We're going to chat Red Sox. We're going to chat Ketel Marte, because right now it feels like everybody is getting an extension.
Yes. We also are going to talk about the undefeated Dodgers, the undefeated Padres, the winless Braves. And of course, it's Friday. We got the good, the bad, the ugly. Cannot wait for that. We are recording this Thursday night because I got a little travel coming on Friday. That's because Jake and I are attending the same wedding this weekend of one of our closest friends from high school. We will preview the wedding at the end of this podcast. But it's time to talk about baseball. Our opener this week is another extension.
Christian Campbell has been in the major leagues for 6 minutes, and he has already earned himself an extension from the Boston Red Sox. The very highly touted rookie who made the team out of camp has had a supersonic ascension over the last calendar year. Heading into this point last season, he was like the 13th best prospect on some lists.
Way down. I don't even think he was on the pipeline top 30. He was their fourth round pick in 2023, but those guys aren't automatically on the top 30. Listen, the Red Sox had some other famous prospects that people liked. This guy was not on anybody's radar in a very real way. However, we should...
And then bang.
I mean, one of the most amazing minor league breakouts we've ever seen. He goes three levels. He hits better at every level somehow. He has a 997 OPS, reaches AAA as a 22-year-old, hits 20 homers, steals 20 bases, 30 doubles. He's walking a bunch. He's not striking out very much. He's playing like five different positions, a little bit of shortstop, a little bit of center, a little bit of left. And it's just like, where the hell did this guy come from? So the short version of Christian Campbell, like how he got to that point, because I do think, again, this has happened so fast that people seeing Christian Campbell getting an extension, there's some people being like, I love this one in particular, because the people that, you know, the ball knowers who have been following the Christian Campbell breakout are like, oh my God, he's getting ripped off for $60 million for this guy. This is crazy. He could be making $200 to $300 million. And then there's also probably so many people who are like, who? What? Why? What just happened? Why are the Red Sox giving this player I've never heard of all this money? And that's
because
why
we had heard of, like, even Jackson Churio, when he got his extension, having not made the big leagues, like, he was a top 20 prospect in baseball, right?
Yeah.
And Christian Campbell, because he has not had that runway, is way less on people's radars. But let's say this.
Yeah.
If you are a person with a radar.
Yeah.
And Christian Campbell's not on it. I mean, That's well, the time.
Now you won't have to be following, you know, the Woo Sox or your favorite prospect outlet, because he's here. He is hitting as part of this Boston Red Sox lineup. And we can get into how he has looked so far as a big leaguer. But just a little bit more background as to just like where the hell this guy came from. He wasn't a total nobody, but growing up in Georgia, there's a lot of good high school baseball players. And so he was kind of in that mix of high school infielders where it was like, yeah, like athlete, good player, but didn't stand out in any sort of remarkable way to where teams wanted to give him a bunch of money out of high school. So he goes to Georgia Tech and he's not really ready to play college baseball yet. And so what does he do? He redshirts. Now, this is not something that is usually something that super top prospects are going to do. We have had another recent story like this, a player in Charlie Condon, ironically, this same year, also in Georgia, except at Georgia, not at Georgia Tech, where Charlie Condon redshirts as a player who doesn't, you know, feel like he's totally ready to, you know, be a useful college baseball player and just trains with the team and gets stronger and all these things. And then comes back and just has one of the most amazing breakout seasons that we've ever seen. Christian Campbell was not quite as an explosive of a debut. After he redshirts as a freshman, he goes to the Northwoods League, has a really, really good season up there, one of the strongest summer leagues. That's when he got on my radar, and I was like, huh, this guy was decent in high school, has a good summer ball, good long year in summer ball. And then at Georgia Tech, he has a good season. He's like the only guy on his team that's not really striking out. Georgia Tech always has a bunch of big burly sluggers who could hit the ball really far and strike out a bunch. Christian Campbell was the opposite. He was still kind of the skinny kid. He was hitting the ball hard, but a ton of ground balls. He only hit 4 home runs in his redshirt freshman season. And because he was older as a high schooler, he was draft eligible as a redshirt freshman. So he only played 1 year of college baseball. The Red Sox take him in the 4th round. And then the story of his season last year is the Red Sox hitting development kind of helps him make these tweaks that helps him improve his bat speed, that helps him maximize his contact ability, which was already really strong. And it just comes together in a stunning way to the point where he is suddenly one of the top prospects in baseball, has this amazing minor league season. And he comes into camp and they're like, we need Christian Campbell on our team right now. And even after the season he had last year, we were all like, man, like that feels pretty aggressive 1 week in and it's looking pretty good.
And I think it's important to remember, Alex Bregman is not the one who moved Rafi Devers to DH. It was Christian Campbell as well, because Bregman could have just played second base. He was willing to do that. The Red Sox, on the other hand, were not willing to do that because that would have meant no Christian Campbell. He has validated that talent already. This is from Mike Petriello's article at MLB.com. He has the hardest hit ball on the Red Sox this year and the 3 fastest swings.
Yeah,
that's not everything, obviously, but that is significant that he is already showing why he was so highly touted this past offseason and in camp, and also showing why he was worthy of such a significant lengthy extension.
Yeah. And so, right, you know, 8 years, $60 million. There's a couple team options. It buys out at least 2 free agent years, could be up to 4 with those team options. And yeah, I mean, obviously, if he has a 1200 OPS for the next 5-6 years, yeah, he could have made a lot more money in free agency. As usual with players like this who sign extensions early on, there is a lot of discourse about, oh my God, he's getting ripped off. What are they thinking? Oh my goodness. And, you know, you see we saw some level of that even with Jackson Merrill, who got a much larger extension. And he had, of course, proven it over a much larger sample in the major leagues. But you say, what do you do? Dude, you could reach range at 27 and make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more than that. And I mean, Jackson Merrill said at his press conference, he was like, yeah, that's cool. Like, I love where I am. I want to be a Padre. They're going to put $100 million. Giving me a guarantee that right now I can chill and just be a Padre for the next 10 years and have a great time and have generational wealth. And in Campbell's case, a player who was not at all on anybody's radar a year ago. Yeah, yes. Is this a team friendly deal in all likelihood? Yes. Yes, it is. If you want to view that as him being taken advantage of, like I understand that from a logical calculation. I get it. But I mean, the kid just locked up $60 million.
He's played six games in the major leagues. It's simpler than that. Mm-hmm. When we see this contract, I think the first reaction should be, hell yeah, for the kid.
Yeah.
you know, I do think there is something to be said about he's potentially leaving value for himself on the table, but it's not necessarily a horrifying thing, right? It's so context dependent. And I think that we should be happy. This is a huge deal for Christian Campbell and for his family. Mm-hmm. And if that's what they wanted, then that is a good thing, right? Yeah. His agency, Beverly Hills Sports Council, has Anthony Santander and Alex Cobb, who somehow got $15 million this winter. They represented Barry Bonds, okay? They understand the dynamics of the sport. They understand that if Christian Campbell had waited 6 years, he might have gotten a lot more money. But guess what? The agent works for the player. I'm going to say that again. The agent works for the player. And if the player wants to be in a place for a long time for a certain amount of money, it is the agent's job to make that happen. Christian Campbell, the baseball player. Really a unique, singular type of hitter. I comped him to Yuli Gurriel just from a mechanical standpoint. The way that his bat kind of trails behind him and you watch him swing and you're like, how is he ever going to make contact with the baseball? And then the next thing you know, it's off the wall.
It's as you just mentioned before, from Petriello's article, the bat speed is, even though it doesn't look as elegant as we're kind of used to our top prospects having, guys like his fellow prospect homies, you know, Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony, who have these picturesque, like perfect swings that have been curated since they were 14. And generally, you know, left-handed hitters, you know, you could say that those swings tend to look better, but there are plenty of pretty right-handed swings. And frankly, Christian Campbell's is not one of them. And it doesn't matter. You know, it works. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say it's like on the Hunter Pence level of weird, but it's kind of clunky, right? But it works for him. And he has the hand-eye and just the bat to ball skills that it's working. And you combine that kind of bat speed, you are going to produce power, and you combine kind of the discipline of being able to draw your walks and have that part of your kind of on-base profile as well. It's a hell of a ball player. What makes him interesting is that his defensive fit is still a mystery. Now, part of that is because of the nature of the Red Sox roster. Part of that is because he has not yet proven to be very good at any position. And then part of that is because he hasn't played that much baseball. So we don't really know. He's bounced around a ton. And so we haven't gotten a large sample of him at really any single position. His 1 year in college, he was mostly playing second. Now we know he's mostly playing second, but it seems like they're still going to give him some time in the outfield. But right now, it's interesting that the Red Sox considered that right now his best place is at second base. Now, of course, his max value might be at shortstop. It might be, I guess he played some center field. How the Red Sox roster revolves around him, what happens with Trevor Story, what happens with Sidon Rafaela, if he's somewhat still an everyday player, like there's a lot of questions. But as we've always said about this Red Sox rebuild in any team, about Baltimore or, you know, the Cubs 10 years ago, get a bunch of good hitters and you'll be in a good spot and you can kind of figure it out from there. And Christian Campbell was obviously the one they felt good about right away. But we should also mention that Roman Anthony is already off. He's looking, as expected, awesome in AAA, and he might be forcing the Red Sox hand here sooner rather than later as well.
One last thing for me on Campbell, just going through his early highlights. So I think for young players, there are a lot of guys who can pull the ball with authority, and then there are a lot of guys who can go the other way with authority. And I think for a younger player, especially in the minors, if someone's hitting the ball to the opposite field a lot, it's actually a bad sign. Because once you get to the big leagues and you're late on fastballs, you're going to be late on fastballs. Campbell, since debuting, has 4 doubles to the opposite field and 2 pulled home runs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like he has a couple of these where he's just getting a fastball in the outer half, sticking his bat out and hitting it down the right field line pretty firmly. And he's turned on to and hit them out of the yard. And like, that is just a very rare package to see in one specific player. As far as the bigger picture is for the Red Sox, we talked about Crochet on the last pod. I don't think this is the last extension. I mean, if you go up and down this roster right now, Brian Bello, similar extension. Sidon Rafaela, similar extension. If Roman Anthony and or Marcelo Meyer come up to the big leagues and are good, I would not be shocked for them to get extensions. You can see a world where Meyer doesn't get up this year and they give him the extension at the beginning of next spring training, or Anthony this offseason. there's money to work with here. They think this is the core. And when you are locking these players up, quote, under, like, for team friendly deals, it just gives you more money to work with. And it's going to allow them to keep this core together. If I was a Red Sox fan, I mean, the vibes have to be immaculate. The hope just coursing through the veins of this franchise is unlike anything we've felt since 2018 when they were the best team in baseball and won the World Series with a homegrown core.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a really good time to be excited.
It's a good time. It's a good time. Now, obviously, you know, opening weekend wasn't as inspiring as they maybe would have hoped, but they take the series from the Orioles this week. Crochet looked sensational, going 8 innings for the first time in the big leagues as a starter, 8 shutout, and of course, the offense starting to pick it up. Rafi Devers starting to swing it a little bit better. So, yeah, I have to imagine Boston's got to be feeling good. They got their home opener this weekend against St. Louis, and then they have Toronto coming to town for 4 games next week. So we'll see. I guess we both picked the Red Sox to win this division. If the Yankees keep hitting 25 home runs a game, it is going to be challenging. But I think the Red Sox are also going to hit a bunch of home runs this year, and Christian Campbell will be contributing to that. Let's stick on the extension. I mean, these now we're just getting them daily at this point. So I don't know how many more extensions we're going to be talking about as we continue on into April. Of course, the big one is still in theory looming out there in Vlad Jr. But some of these other teams are saying, all right, now's the time. Tis the season. And the Snakes have decided to keep Ketel Marte in the desert for even longer than they already had him under team control. He signed a 5-year extension back in March of 2022 worth $76 million. So he was still owed around $50 million over the next 3 years. So there wouldn't seem to be any urgency. Ketel Marte clearly still in his prime. And you have him for 3 more years. And by that point, he's going to be in his mid-30s. So, like, the D-backs could have very reasonably just sat there and just continued to have him make $14 or $15 million and be one of the best players in the National League. But they decide to extend him for an additional, I want to say, I think it's another 4 seasons. So this extension will be worth around $115 million over the next 7 seasons through age 37. It's very backloaded, and there's also a lot of deferred money. So it seems like some of the motivation from Arizona here is not just we want Ketel Marte when he's 36, but also we can actually kind of lessen our payroll over the next couple of years by pushing off some of his money into the future while still having one of the best. I mean, he is elite. He finished 3rd in the MVP last year. It was one of the more remarkable kind of under the radar elite seasons, nearly, I think, almost 7 war. We talked about it last year, but you know what he did in 2019 was so amazing and felt completely impossible to replicate, especially when you factor in how juiced the balls were that year. He was sensational last year. All of his underlying stuff completely backs it up. And it generally has over the course of his career, but he reached a new level last year coming off that historic postseason performance where he had the longest hitting streak in playoff history, which is pretty freaking cool. And now he's a huge part of this team. And I know Arizona has undergone some changes with Christian Walker leaving and, you know, no Jock and all these things. It's like, no, like Ketel Marte is the guy. He's the guy. I know Corbin Carroll's there and he's under, you know, contract for long term, and he's the homegrown guy too. Ketel Marte is the guy. He is one of the best switch hitters of his generation. If you rank switch hitters by war over the last, you know, 6-7 years, it's Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez ahead of everybody else. And then it's Ketel Marte. And then it's a pretty big gap. So he's a hell of a player. And this one's pretty straightforward though, I would say.
He is 25th in war since 2019, which I know doesn't sound really that high, but it is.
That's a lot of years. I mean, that's a long time.
That's a lot of years to be a truly elite player. I was talking to someone at the yard today. I mean, the Diamondbacks are here in New York. I've been around them. And he's the least relevant top 20 player in the world. Like, part of that is because he plays, no slander, for the Diamondbacks and they don't move the needle.
Yeah.
For crossover potential. Part of that is that he plays second base, I think, and he's not tiny like Jose Altuve, and he hasn't been in the postseason that much. I know the Diamondbacks made a run in 2023, but they're not there every single year. And if you want to, like, he exists in this very interesting level of ball knowership, I think. Ketel Marte, if you're listening to this pod, you know that he bangs and he's a good player. But there is like a level below, like a more casual fan is like, whoa, I would love to like be around people who last year were watching like the MVP show at the end of the year. It was like, Ketel Marte was a finalist?
Right. And the thing about him too is he, as a switch hitter, like he's very good from the, you know, batting left-handed. Ketel batting righty is like God tier. Like it's like a 950 OPS over the last four seasons when he is batting righty, which is outrageous. But yeah, he's that good. I know that people get tired of hearing that Jose Ramirez is underrated. And I get that. I think at this point we understand that Jose Ramirez, because he's however many top six MVP finishes, like we get it. Not that he doesn't deserve the love. Ketel Marte deserves more of that discourse because he, at his top end, is one of the best players in baseball. And I don't think anybody cares. So, yeah, he's awesome. So good. Again, get your money, man. He's had a hell of a career.
If anybody out there, hey, Yahoo, love working here. How are we feeling about like a 10-year, $60 million extension
season? Let's go. Let's go. I don't know if our bosses are listening to this. You know, listen to some of the pods. We appreciate it. It seems we like will, now's the time.
I'll do the Campbell extension instead of the Merrill extension. Okay. I'm willing to do that.
We can meet somewhere in the middle there for sure. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to talk about the Dodgers of Los Angeles and the Padres of San Diego, and maybe the Braves of Atlanta. Yikes. All right, we'll be right back.
A lot of zeros in that group. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, a good podcast that I'm on with Jordan. If you go to MLB.com, a website that I frequent every day, and you sort by losses, okay, the very bottom of the page, you will see a couple zeros, right, next to Los Angeles Dodgers and San Diego Padres. That is because those two teams are undefeated. They have never lost this season. They are combined 15-0. The Dodgers are 8-0. The Padres are 7-0. Yes, they play in the same division. A nice hefty W8 and W7. Next to their names, the Padres actually have a better run differential than the Dodgers, plus 25 to plus 22. These two teams so far this year have been the story of the season, besides the Torpedo Bats. And because they are rivals, it is very, very interesting. Let's begin with the Dodgers, who on Wednesday night had just a hilarious, inevitable walk-off victory. They went down 5-0, and I said to my wife, let's watch Severance. I'm sure they're going to come back. I'll deal with it in the morning. And that's exactly what happened.
My version of that was I was talking to my brother and I was just like, all right, I think at this point they were down 5-2. And I said, hey, David, you think Dodgers are going to win this game? And he was not paying attention. He was just like, I don't know what the score is, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a great old tweet from one of our favorite baseball writers, Sam Miller, about the Rays. Mm. And the tweet was, love this trade for the Rays. Who'd they get? Who'd they give up? Mm-hmm. And I think for the Dodgers, it's, oh, yeah, they got this one. And the other night, down 5-0 against the Braves. And it's just like, this one's done. Like, the Braves haven't won a game yet. They're going to wrap this one up. And the Dodgers just come storming back. Raisel Iglesias has to come in the eighth. He barely pitched at all this year.
Right, right. He'd only pitched one time. And Iglesias, I mean, automatic. Like, he talk about underrated. What he did last year was one of the great, like, quiet closer excellent seasons we've seen. But he's barely pitched because they've never been winning late in the game. So they ask him to get eight or to get, I guess, four outs?
Five outs.
Okay. So he gets through the bottom of, well, he does. Sorry, I forgot that he allows
a game tying.
My God.
Hit to Muncy.
So Max Muncy, who's been horrible this season, has been looking for something, looking for that moment. He delivers the game tying double in the bottom of the eighth off Iglesias. And then We go to the ninth, and Iglesias comes back out. He strikes out Andy Pages. Hooray, hooray. Bad news. Shohei Ohtani's coming up. And Ohtani, like, I mean, so you just watch him, and he, one of the best thing about Shohei is, like, he's just, it's so routine. Like, he's just like, he's like, all right, time to win the game.
And let's kind of, win the game now.
It's time to win the game. It is my bobblehead night. I must deliver for
BRB.
All the fans. Yes.
Winning the game.
He has the same facial expression. He even does it. It's not even just like his first at bat. Every at bat he comes, he kind of acknowledges the ump and the catcher. All right, I'm going to go ahead and win this game now.
And it player.
It probably did not matter what pitch he threw. It wasn't really a bad pitch from Iglesias, but I was watching. I'm just like, well, this is probably going to be a home run. First pitch, just again, not a bad pitch. I think fastball, maybe even off the plate, but you'll let the big man get extended. I mean, speaking of extension, let's not let this guy get his arms out. I mean, it's the ball's going over the fence. I'm sorry. Poor Michael Harris going back there, trying to save the game and the season.
Gave it the old college try.
He did his best, but sorry, Money Mike. This night was about Mr. Ohtani, as most nights are. And the Braves, once again, they've been getting smoked. So I was going to say, they haven't
good
had
loss.
Too many like heart. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have too many heartbreakers like this. But again, you start your season in San Diego and LA, not the easiest assignment. But brutal. the Dodgers at this point, like you look at them here, here's a little stat. Cause I wrote a little bit of Yahoo today just to kind of takeaways from the series. The Dodgers have had one game so far with, Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. So they've only had one game because, you know, Mookie was vomiting and Freddie Freeman slipped in the shower and hurt his ankle again. So Freddie Freeman didn't play. Blake Snell has
he's
not
on the
been,
IL.
Yeah, he's Blake Snell has not been good. Max Muncy was just looked awful. Teoscar hasn't really done much. Tommy Edmonds leading the team in home runs. And it doesn't matter. They're way better than everybody else. And definitely way better than the Braves. Padres fans, I know you want to throw your phone listening. However you're listening to this, I know you're very angry. We're going to get to you in a second. But as for the Dodgers, it's just, I mean, yeah, they look like far, not even close. I mean, it's knowing what they are still missing, knowing that Sasaki has done nothing positive, knowing that, you know, they still have all these injured pitchers and injured hitters and some guys aren't getting it. It's like, yeah, this is what one of the best teams on paper as all time is supposed to look like.
I'm happy it's happening this way.
Yeah.
If the Dodgers underwhelmed all regular season and got off to a slow start and we had to pretend to panic.
Especially early. Yeah. Because listen, they'll lose three in a row at some point. But to come out of the gate and just like do in Tokyo and then just keep on with this homestand to start the year, to do it against like teams we think are good, it's great. It's great.
It's great.
It's great.
And you know what? Everyone listening to this who doesn't like the Dodgers, can we all agree they're gonna be in the postseason? Right? I think we can we agree?
We usually say that about the Braves too.
We do. More on that later. I want the Dodgers to enter October as fearsome and as impenetrable and as despised and as inevitable as possible. I want the vitriol and the disgust and the angst at an all-time high so that when someone like the Reds just rolls in and sweeps them because baseball is a random thing, it will hit so hard for all of you. Let me say this. We have had this exact dynamic with the Yankees since 2009. Growing up, someone who rooted for baseball teams, when my baseball team was really bad for a lot of my childhood, the joy was in seeing the Yankees lose in October. Tuning in to watch like those Rangers teams beat the Yankees in the playoffs, right? Like, and people forget this because the Astros turned evil. Yes. But when the Astros were beating the Yankees in like 2017,
early, people loved it.
Oh my God. That was,
people were loving
that
it.
That was hidden.
Yeah. But I do think that specifically with the Dodgers, if we keep it more focused, we didn't have this last year. Everyone was picking against them. Oh, they're too injured. They don't have enough pitching. No. I want them showing up with 130 wins. I want them to just be like, there's no way they can lose because
no half measures.
Yeah. Let's just do this. So while I don't think 162-0 is going to happen, I like how we're starting this. I think that this is, as a neutral, I think this has been very, very enjoyable. Now, last thing on the Dodgers. We discussed on Wednesday with the mailbag, and we had some questions about the Dodgers need a nickname. Okay, great teams throughout baseball history, they get nicknames because they become a character in and of themselves that is kind of greater than the average baseball team, whether that is because they are actually the best team or because they have some sort of specific characteristic. As usual, you find folks delivered. We had a bunch of suggestions. We threw out a couple, but we got a bunch of suggestions regarding what we should call the Dodgers, and we are going to share some of them here now. Where would you like to be?
The great Blue Yonder. That's from Daniel. It's good.
Very solid.
Now, would be better if they had Yonder Alonso.
I'm sure he'll attend some Dodgers games as a MLB Network host at some point this year.
The Ravine Machine.
This one's pretty strong. The machine, it's like, can we do another machine? I guess is the question.
Can we have another machine? And there is a machine right now in AAA, the Mail Machine, obviously hitting for the Norfolk Tides.
That's a player.
He's the machine.
The Mail Machine, yes, that's true. I think he'll be okay if we... Could he end up on the Dodgers?
Probably. Jordan, I need to send you a note. I need to boot up my Gmail machine.
I suggested that we should have something involving Guggenheim. You suggest because that is the very large company ownership group that has enabled much of the great opulence involved with the Dodgers operation. Anyway, you said the Guggenheim project. I thought that was pretty strong. Matthew suggested Guggenheim's Monster.
Pretty good.
Again, Monster. We're getting into the Monster. So that's very solid. What else do we have here? There's one on here that I just truly, truly adore.
So the inevitable Dodgers are really good. And I quite like, from Jeffrey, the Imperial Highway. If the Yankees are the evil empire, I think bringing that energy to the West Coast, and you are, as always in LA, stuck on the Imperial Highway.
That's true. It is something you will have to deal with at some point, which is kind of how all the baseball teams are, at least in the National League. Yeah. You'll probably have to deal with the Dodgers. My personal favorite, and this is a bit of an edit, but I just love that she came up with this. This is from Jennifer on Blue Sky. She mentioned that it made her think of the blue screen of death, which I'm realizing, is that not a thing for MacBooks? I don't think it is, but as a PC user, if you know a PC, that's the worst thing that can happen to your computer, which is you get the old blue screen. Now, she said that made her think of, because you had suggested the blue wall, which is just a tremendous joke that I'm sure a lot of people both really hated and also laughed at.
The Dodgers will lose in the end.
That is quite possible. But to me, blue screen of death, I mean, the blue team of death is, that's my small edit. I think blue team of death is pretty good. If we're talking about just like, we can't, you know, they are terrifying. We cannot stop them. Again, it's a little dark, but I think it's hilarious. If you immediately recognize that it's the blue screen of death.
It has an anti-Mac tilt to it. It's very kind of PC-ish.
That's fine. I think most people, it's, I think it's a pretty mainstream
that
term.
Joke is, the joke's too PC.
That's true. Yeah. All right. I apologize. Anyway, so those are some of the, any of the other ones that we got?
No, I'm ready to keep rolling.
Keep sending them though. Keep sending them in, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Let's talk about this.
Mail.com.
Yes. Let's talk about the San Diego Padres, Jake. Brandon Lockridge. Yes. The fighting Lockridges. Braves fans, listen.
You don't need this.
Win a game. We'll talk about you. Let's just go beat the Marlins, hopefully.
If
maybe
Valente Belozo shoves it to you.
Yes. I will
this
say
weekend, we can check in.
We are setting up for, has to be one of the stranger vibes for a home opener that we've seen in some time.
So
I'm very curious what that is going to look like on Friday in Atlanta. Anyway, okay, let's get back to the Padres, because this team deserves our love too. Do they look invincible? No. But damn, are they playing some good ball.
playing good ball.
What is going right for the San Diego Padres this year? Why is, again, I was higher on them than you coming into the season. I felt comfortable. I said, this is it. A lot of these guys are going to be free agents. Of course, Cease and King. But I love the Pivetta signing. I'm all in on the Merrill Tatis combo. And that is really the combo that has carried them so far. The trio of Padres hitting 400. Yes, Jackson Merrill. Yes, Fernando Tatis Jr. And yes, Gavin Sheets.
Between the sheets, baby.
What have you liked about this Padres team so far this year?
This is full Tatis, man.
We are getting, he's running. He's already got five bags.
Yeah, dude.
He's the leadoff guy. He's like, great, let's go. Let's ride. This is great. This is it. Tatis is obviously a treat to watch. And yeah, I mean, him and Merrill, it's as good as it gets. Now, still some concerns about the depth, for sure.
Well, that's what's so interesting about how they've done this so far, is that they brought in all these NRIs, non-roster invitees, to essentially fill out the roster. And that's Gavin Sheets. That's Jason Hayward. I don't know. So let me just actually back up. I don't know which of these guys were NRIs and which guys were actual signings.
Hayward was a real signing. But yeah.
You know what? Doesn't actually matter.
Yeah,
because it's all the same energy.
Yep.
Jose Iglesias, Yuli Gurriel, Martin Maldonado, Elias Diaz.
Diaz was Jason a real Hayward, one. Connor Gavin Joe's Sheets. The other one who hasn't played. I guess he's in AAA. But all these guys, and it was that a reflection group of the fact that they did not have internal depth at all.
Yes. So far, Maldonado and Yuli Gurriel, terrible. Now, it's a very small sample. I understand. Bad.
They look bad.
Elias
They're 38 Diaz, and 41. We can't be surprised.
Not great.
That's the thing. They're also all really old, except for Gavin Sheets.
Jason Hayward, similar. Just looks kind of, it all looks a little slow. Gavin Sheets looks like Babe Ruth. Like, if that's how it plays out, honestly, if Gavin Sheets is a 110 OPS plus guy this year, you won the NRI lottery. Like, whatever, bro. You'll pick up like Gio Urshela in July and everything will be okay.
Yeah. And Gavin Sheets, you know, he's not, I mean, he was a second round pick, but he has been shackled by the being White a White Sox. Sox as this has descended into absolute just. And it's funny because it's kind of fitting. His one good season was his rookie season in 2021 when the White Sox were good. And since then, he has just been I mean, he was really bad in 23, but last year, just like a below average DH that does not bring any value, obviously, because you're a DH, no defense. But now he's hitting. And even if it's in a platoon role, but at this point, dude, the guy should be hitting every day. I mean, why not? You don't have any other better alternatives. So just like let the guy hit.
I love a change of scenery guy where it's just so obvious. Sorry. Where it's like you are having the worst time ever being on the worst team ever.
Yep.
And the Padres are just an elite, like, you know, mercenary travel ball, F it, let's ride. Like, we're out here and we're in your face and it's sunny out and the yard is packed and everyone's feeling it. And it's like Gavin Sheets looks like God. Now, maybe he'll be, you know, a chihuahua in a month and a half, but we can talk about that when we
to be clear, that's there. An El Paso chihuahua. Their AAA team. There may be some people like, what? Is that like him telling him that he's like small? And I don't know. just clarify. But thank yes, you. Very possible. But either way, now, he has already provided multiple. Like he's already been worth the NRI. I mean, amazing.
Now, one thing that is worth pointing out that is not sustainable, the bullpen has allowed two runs total.
Well,
it will not continue to allow two runs. However, it is a reminder.
Yeah.
Good bullpen.
Oh, bullpen's great. So, like, I still expect the bullpen to be elite, but that is more a reflection of the Braves, who, as we know, currently cannot hit, and the Guardians, who also do not exactly have the most fearsome offense. But yeah, I mean, it's just everything on the mound so far has been working. I know Michael King was not good on opening day. He was great in his second start. And yeah, they look awesome. And I'm quite enjoying watching them play baseball.
This is not a shocking statement. The team that my mind has been changed the most about since opening day is the San Diego Padres. Even more than the Braves on the other side of things. Like, I do think at worst, the Braves will return to mediocrity and pretend to be in the wild card mix. Like, that's the low end in my mind for the Braves. I mean, the Padres look like this is game four of the NLDS. Like, the vibe they had in games two and three just never ended. And the Dodgers never came back and won. And Manny Machado never, you know, viciously attacked Dave Roberts with a baseball. And just the energy kept on flowing. We've almost, like, Men in Black erased our brains of everything that happened in the in-between, because the vibe is just a change. Like,
that's how it was going into the postseason, right? It's how it was for a lot of the second half. Like, we all thought that they could be that. And that was before they had Gavin Sheets. Last thing I'll say about Dodgers and Padres, two more things. One, it sucks they don't play until June. But by that point, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. And they play, I think, in consecutive weeks. So they play like seven times in 2 weeks. So that will be, just get ready. That'll be fun.
Flex the schedule. Who says no?
just change it up. That said, the other thing to mention here is that the Diamondbacks and Giants are also playing pretty well. And this NL West could be something really, really, really special. Early to say, obviously, these teams are going to have to take losses at some point. And the Rockies are also there. But this will be a division that, I know we were kind of gearing up for the NL East to be that. The Braves have kind of already ruined those plans. But the NL West, I think, will be giving us some version of that as far as a division races that we are very excited to see.
We'll do a little weekend preview at the end, but just worth saying, Dodgers going to play the Phillies in Philadelphia this weekend.
Ooh.
That is going to be some good old-fashioned baseball. You and I will be in Philadelphia at a wedding and not in any of these games, which, you know, just a tough bounce of the baseball. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will do the good, the bad, and of course, the ugly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, it is time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing that reminds us of Dan Ugla. Bizarre, weird, funky, neat, and different. I'm going to kick you the rock, Mr. Schusterman, and you can go first. What was good this week?
I'm going to quickly do a super timely good, which is that Nestor Cortes Jr. is pitching right now after his catastrophic season opener at Yankee Stadium. Six scoreless, one hit allowed against the Reds. As the Reds offense, oh my God, what a brutal week for the Reds offense after getting shut out twice by the Rangers at home. But my good this week, let's go back to the Padres. More Padres stuff. Jackson Merrill's press conference. There were a lot of great moments during the Jackson Merrill press conference announcing his extension. But my favorite, which I tweeted out the clip of, was AJ Preller telling the story of the first time he watched Jackson Merrill play. The reason why I love this story so much is that it is almost, I mean, it is exactly a caricature of AJ Preller, just confirming everything. Anytime you talk to anybody in baseball about AJ Preller and what he is like, it is essentially just this story, which he revealed, which is basically that he went to scout Jackson Merrill in high school, and it was like shortly after COVID. So there was like restrictions, and basically he was like hiding at the football stadium 100 yards away trying to watch Jackson Merrill without being spotted, because when a GM shows up to a high school baseball game in Maryland, where there's not a lot of GMs pouring into Maryland high school baseball games, he did not want to be spotted, especially because part of the Jackson Merrill story is that not a lot of people knew about Jackson Merrill, even the spring of his senior year, and so he did not want to be spotted. But as he tells a wonderful story, he was spotted. He was kicked out because he wasn't where he was supposed to be at a time when people could not just go wherever they wanted. And he ended up being stuck talking to Jackson Merrill's dad and obviously finding out how awesome Jackson Merrill was. And all of the stories about just kind of the early back and forth between them, between Merrill and the Padres was really cool. And it is a hell of a story. And that story too is part of why the Padres are still in the position to be where they're at, because they have made a lot of Preller has made a lot of wild decisions over the years. But this team and this Preller himself And a lot of the people in that organization, they can scout. And that is how they have been able to continue to kind of resupply the pipeline to then trade and trade and trade and trade and trade. Merrill is the one guy they knew they were never going to trade. And that's looking pretty good right now. So AJ Preller talking about trying to be incognito. That was good.
I have two goods. The two players I'm going to mention for my goods last season combined to produce -2 wins above replacement.
Yeah.
I am talking about Patrick Wisdom
and Tywon
Walker.
Yes, 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 yes.
Patrick Wisdom, as many of you know, was a power-happy third baseman for the Chicago Cubs. His best season for these Cubs, probably in 2021, where he had a 118 OPS plus. His season from 2023 exemplifies it perfectly, a 205 batting average and 23 bombs. Power over hit, but he was horrendous last year at the age of 32. And so he went this year to Korea, where the game seems to simply be too dang easy for him. He has 5 home runs through 9 games and a 1363 OPS. I don't know if we'll get an Eric Thames situation here where Patrick Wisdom becomes Ooh. God and comes back, but it is certainly in play. So he was negative. He was negative 0.6 WAR last year. Okay. And the other player I'm going to talk about is Tywon Walker. Tywon Walker, who last year, excuse me, Patrick Wisdom was negative 0.4. Tywon Walker was negative 1.6 baseball reference wins above replacement last year. He threw 83 and two-thirds innings and had a 7.10 ERA for the Philadelphia Phillies, the division-winning Philadelphia Phillies. I would love a stat head search. The last time a team won the division with a pitcher, 80 innings, ERA over 7.
7.10. He was awful. Obviously, that was the second year of his four-year, $72 million contract.
Booed out of the barn, basically left for dead, just not a part of the Phillies' plans this season. Ranger Suarez ends up getting hurt in camp. Walker moves back from the long man in the bullpen to the rotation. And during spring training, he was getting booed like every time he went out. He had
spring
one start,
training boos is tough to accomplish.
Correct. He goes out today against a stacked Colorado Rockies lineup and he delivers the goods. 6 strong, no runs surrendered, 4 punch outs notched. Tywon Walker leaves the mound in the end of the 6th to a roaring Citizens Bank Park crowd. But to be serious, like getting booed has to freaking stink. That has to suck, right? And it's not like Tywon Walker's not trying, you know? And for him to go out there in the face of that and carve, he might be retired by July. We have no idea. This could go sideways in a million ways. I don't think he will maintain his 0 ERA, but for him to have a beautiful day in April, a moment he will indeed remember, that is unequivocally good.
Amen to that. Yes, of course, he is only in the rotation right now because Ranger Suarez is injured, but they are paying him a lot of money. So if he can give them any semblance of not awful outings, I think they would certainly appreciate that. Let's go to bad, something Tywon Walker used to be. I am going to go with something very simple, and that is the A's first series in Sacramento. I don't want to, you know, be too harsh on the players themselves. I know we kind of, when we talk about the A's, there's a lot of different layers of what we're talking about and what we're frustrated by and everything. That said, regardless of any this of the specifics, opening up your ballpark as a major league ballpark, losing 18-3, 7-4, and 10-2, and feeling fairly non-competitive in all of them. What is bad about it is that it had the energy of what John Fisher said when they first talked about this, which was, come see the other team's good players. And Kyle Tucker was like, I'm here. Check me out.
Check me out.
And, you know, good to see the Cubs scoring runs. Cubs look good. Again, there's players on the A's we like that can be good, but we said we were concerned about this pitching staff. And so far, and we'll see how the ballpark actually ends up playing. If it ends up playing that small, that is bad news for this pitching staff. But it just sucks because it's like none of this is good. And then to have the team get spanked like that in three games was tough. So that's bad.
Jesse Chavez is not bad, but the way that he was treated by the Atlanta Braves, that, my dear friend, was bad. Jesse Chavez, the eternal Brave, all roads for him lead back to Truist Park. He spent stints with the Atlanta Braves in 2010, and then again in 2021 on his Wikipedia page, it says Atlanta Braves' second stint. Then it says Atlanta Braves' third stint. Then it says Atlanta Braves' fourth stint. But it is not his fourth stint because it's his fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth stint, it feels like, because he... In 2024, he signed a minor league deal with the White Sox, went to camp with them, was released, and just rejoined the Braves. It's almost like he's a Rule 5 pick who has to keep getting returned to the Braves, except he's 40.
And the same thing happened again this year.
He goes to camp with the Rangers. Yeah. He's released on March 21st, signed by the Braves on March 23rd. Okay. He doesn't make the team out of camp. Like, he's technically in AAA to start. He gets selected after Hector Neris gets bombed on opening weekend. And they have Jesse Chavez come in and they have him just wear one. They have him just absolutely wear one. I think it was against the Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
In one of those.
Yeah, they were down. One of those games. Down 6-0. Yeah.
Down 6-0. I think it allows a homer to Kike. And then they DFA him and send him to Gwinnett. And he rejected the assignment.
He's gone.
And chose free agency. To me, says that Jesse Chavez, at this point in his life, in this point in his career, at the age of 41, has no time for the antics of the Gwinnett Stripers. He is going to pitch in the major leagues, or he is going to sit on his goddamn couch. And for that, that is good. But the idea that the Braves, who had this like 5-year history with this guy, literally were just like, hey, you're going to come up, and we're going to pay you a prorated minimum to get blasted and sponge up innings, and then we're going to just kick you to the curb again. What is he going to do? He's going to be a free agent, and then whenever they need pitching in a month and a half, they're just going to sign him back. They're going to trot him out there. He's going to give up they're going to be down 7-2, and he's going to allow a 3-run shot to, Pavin Smith, and then he's just going to go and get retired again. This is just eternal.
Yeah, I guess that is the question, is was that actually finally the last major league appearance for Jesse Chavez?
No.
History tells us no. He will be back next spring somehow, some way. Or maybe later.
Does he pitch
summer.
For the Braves? Does maybe he pitch for the summer? Braves again?
I don't think he's pitching for anybody else. I mean, at this point, I agree that is bad. All right, let's go to Ugla. Jack Bauer. Now, you might think, oh my gosh, I saw this. A left-handed pitcher in high school throwing 102? That's good. That's great. That's amazing. is it? Velocity nowadays is truly ludicrous. And now we have a high school senior by the name of Jack Bauer. Yes, he wears number 24. No, I did not watch that show, so I cannot make the proper references to it. Did you?
Boom, boom.
Did you watch 24?
Boom, boom.
Jack Bauer was well known last year on the summer showcase circuit. He was a good high school pitcher. Throwing 93. He was throwing 93. 93, 94. Now he's throwing 102. So
too fast.
Verified 102 at a tournament down in Georgia this week. I don't even know what. Like, I just don't even know what to make of this because this is so preposterous. And like, he did it for like 2 innings and wasn't throwing strikes. And it's like, what do you do with this? Like, if you're a scout and you sure you're used to velocity, but again, lefty throwing 100 is like 5 people in the majors over the last however many years. And you have this kid, it's ridiculous. And the fact that even that these high school hitters are like getting reasonable hacks off also speaks to how absurd just like amateur baseball is right now.
Yeah. Also, maybe he's just got bad extension. I don't like the fastball shape on this high school lefty throw 102. But because here's the thing, for a century, baseball scouting, when it came to pitchers, was a simple Yeah. Relatively simple proposition when it came to the fastball. How hard is the fastball? Is it a fast fastball? And now we have reached a point where having the fastest fastball
we've
is
ever
a bad
really
thing.
Seen from a high school.
It's like a bad. I'm going to just say it. It's a bad thing.
Yeah,
it's a good thing that this child's body moves in a way that allows him to produce this level of heat. Maybe this is morbid. If you're throwing 102 at that age, you're gonna break. The likelihood that you're gonna break is just so much higher. I'm not saying this kid should go out there and baby it at 95.
Well, right. But also, it's like, guess what, dude? If you could throw strikes at 95 throwing lefty, you're going in the first round.
Just go do that.
It actually might be a better path to the first round, because right now, talking to people about this, they're like, what do I do with this? Because on one hand,
let him go to school, let him go to college, throw strikes.
He's committed to Virginia. But then it's like, if you're Virginia and he's not throwing strikes, you can't.
He's not
going
to play.
He's not going to pitch. And then you have people being like, wait a minute, why isn't the kid that threw 102 pitching in college? It's like,
they're just going to go to a JUCO. And then
this is why this is so ugly. Because what will probably happen if he can stay healthy, knocking on, I mean, how much wood can I not, like, okay, is that he will get drafted probably somewhere and someone will pay him a few million dollars. But if not, like, there's so many things that are going to maybe happen from now until July. He could show up next week throwing 93 and everyone's like, what was that? Where's oh, he's hurt. Oh, he's tired. Oh, it's cold because now I'm in Chicago again. Like, this is just such an ugly data point that
I don't know what to do,
but it makes him one of the most interesting players in the draft. Indisputably, no matter what happens from here on out, this high school pitcher throwing 102 miles an hour with his left hand is a big deal. I don't know what happens from here. It is ugly.
It's like when we see these videos of like middle schoolers playing AAU hoops who are like 7'2", and you're like, well, I mean, I'm happy for the kid.
I don't know what it is.
Call me in a couple years. Like,
is he good? Is he tall? Right? That's kind of where we're at now.
Is he throwing hard?
Is he good? Is he throwing hard? There's a lot of that when you're talking about amateur baseball now. Anyway, I enjoyed that conversation. What's your ugly?
So the Mariners starting another guy named Luis Castillo is kind of a layup of an ugly.
Hey, wait. You know what's significant about him? Of course, for those of you who did not see, the Mariners are calling up a pitcher who is also named Luis Castillo to make, I believe, what will be his first major league start. He has been in the big leagues briefly over the last year or so because they have some injuries. George Kirby. So he will start the same day or the day after or the day before the Luis Castillo that all of us know and love. So that is what is happening. However, I am much more invested in these other Luis Castillo. Jake Mintz. Do you know why? You should be able to see it pretty easily if you pull up his baseball reference page. So he has not pitched in the big league since 2022. He pitched for the Tigers in three games. This man was born on March 10th, 1995, just like me. And since my other baseball twin, Josh Van Meter, retired, I am now all in on the other Luis Castillo. Who are they playing?
Good answer.
Who's he starting against? I should know this. I know he's on the Mariners. I don't know who he's pitching against. I should probably know, but I am excited about that. Sorry, I just like totally stole your ugla. At the Giants.
Yeah, you did. Against, I mean, like at this point.
Against Justin Verlander. That's fun. On Friday. So anything else to
can
add?
Can I go now? Or do you want to do two?
No.
I have a different ugla completely. That was just an offhanded ugla comment, and you just railroaded my ugla. You just took it.
Oh, you're cheating. You did two goods. You did two goods. Now you're doing two uglas. Like, come on, dude. We only have so much time.
Go ahead. You know what? Yeah. That's my ugla. Thank you. No. I'm done here.
No, I want to know.
I'm done.
I want to know what your ugla
Thanks
is.
Thanks for listening.
I want to know what your ugla is.
My ugla is Shohei Ohtani is on the cover of a video game that I don't know. It's one of the ones I think you play on your phone. Whatever. To promote this, he was asked to pick three pitchers and three batters that will, quote, like, be on his team. And he picked Adley Rutschman, Mookie Betts, and Stephen Kwan for his batters. And Zach Gallen, Ryan Helsley, and Tarek Skubal for his pitchers. I went ahead and put this into like Google Translate. And the most interesting thing I got through that very irresponsible way to translate Japanese was that he said Stephen Kwan will be a really inspirational figure to a lot of Japanese kids, like players, because of how he hits in the majors. That Stephen Kwan's like style of hitting is like very amenable to MPB. And so I thought that was like a cool way. I like the idea that Shohei Ohtani sees Stephen Kwan's like that. I know that.
Yeah, I like that. Well, but also it's like, that's kind of the one thing that Shohei can't do. Like, I know he doesn't strike out that much, but like that style of hitting is the one thing that's just like not really in his bag because he's enormous.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, right. Also, not behoove him to do that because he can do like what he did on Wednesday.
And so he picked Adley.
Yeah, what do we part, think? It seems. Picks? Yeah.
Well, he picked Mookie because duh, but sure, he picked Adley because he's a switch hitter, he said. And I think Shohei is somewhat jealous that he can't switch hit.
That makes sense. I'm looking and it seems like he has only faced Ryan Helsley one time.
Yeah, 0-1 with a K. I looked 0-1
with a K. What about Zach Gallen? I guess he's
faced
him more.
I like that Shohei faced Ryan Helsley and just like, oh my God. Nuts.
1-7 with 5 strikeouts against Gallen. So that would seem to suggest that he is being like, those guys are good. I like that. Yep. I like that. Shohei Ohtani, we love you dearly. Thank you for making our sport relevant single-handedly.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks for the job.
Shohei Ohtani, pretty good. Pretty good. Steven Nelson's call of Shohei Ohtani's walk-off. Fantastic. Shouts out, Steven Nelson. We love you, too. Thank you to Colin Brennan for producing this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. This Thursday night edition, hopefully you're enjoying on Friday. Jake and I are off to a wedding this weekend in Philadelphia for one of our closest friends from high school. Congratulations to Ben and Caroline. We love them so much. What baseball will we be watching on our phones during the wedding, Jake?
That's a good question, Jordan. Dodgers, Phillies, of course. I am compelled by Gunner versus Bobby Witt. We got Royals, Orioles this weekend. I am intrigued by Blue Jays, Mets. The Blue Jays have showed a little bit more spice this year so far than I thought. Mm-hmm.
Padres at Wrigley.
I think that's it.
Padres at Wrigley. So Padres, who is more likely to come out undefeated? What do we think? Will we still have an undefeated team when we speak on Monday morning?
Yes.
Yes. But don't say which one. Don't say which one. Now, will the Braves still be winless? Will they get swept at home by the Marlins? Braves fans,
hey,
say your prayers.
Yeah. You joke, but the Marlins are rolling out Max Meyer.
Hey, Max Meyer's good.
And like Max Meyer. TBD. And then on Sunday, they've got TBD on the hill. So Braves fans shaking your boots. Thank you all for listening. Let's get out of here. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you all for listening. Talk to you Monday.